Blog Talk Radio.
They creep and crawl all through the night. Stealing your hands. They scratch and bite. You search the shadows and find the shivers. The midnight magic.
Well, good evening, everyone. It's time for Cryptid Studies Institute Radio. I'm your host, Johnny Henderson, and with me, as always, is my son and partner in crime, Elijah Henderson.
Hey, hey, how's it going?
Lately, we have been very, very busy on the front of cryptid research. We recently had an outing in LBL, or Land Between the Lakes, for those who don't know what it is. We've attended a CryptoCon. This is our third radio show this week, and we've been working on trying to figure out a way to put on our own CryptoCon, trying to help make someone else's CryptoCon a bigger event. So we've been extraordinarily busy.
So needless to say, we got a lot of things cooking on the stove.
Yeah, a lot on our plate. Tonight, we are waiting for a fellow researcher who only wants to be known as Jack. Jack is an interesting man in the way that he says that he is not a believer. I'll let him explain that, because until he actually can look one in the face, find a body, put his hands on it, he's going to have a healthy skepticism. So we're looking forward to talking to Jack here in the next little bit.
Absolutely, and I got a text back from him. We should be hearing from him in a minute. And by the way, I'd just like to thank fellow researcher Jason Acey for making that radio show thing for us. It's very awesome, brother.
Yeah, we debuted a brand new theme song this evening. Also want to give a shout out to our good friends at I'm drawing a blank here.
Are you talking about our friends up in Harlan?
Yes, our friends in Harlan County.
Well, we'd like to give a shout-out to our friend Jimmy Blant, who was in charge... Who was in charge of the CryptoCon up in Harlan, Kentucky, and our friends who run Paranormal Chaos.
Yep, Marcella Chadwick and her husband,
James Chadwick.
Yep, I think the radio show is What If It's All True?
Yes, sir, that is it, for sure. We're actually, another little detail, we were on a radio show the other night for University of Cryptozoology. They're a show based out of Hawaii.
So like we said, we've been extraordinarily busy with a lot of things. Hopefully, we'll have some great things coming for you.
And we should, in the very near future, have an episode that is devoted to a lot of the interviews that we did up there. Because at our table that we had up in Harlan, we set up a little interview booth, and we talked to people back and forth about what they've seen up in that county. And there's a lot of interesting things that are being seen up there, more than you'd expect.
Oh, absolutely a lot of things. I hope that everyone, all the dads out there, had a great Father's Day. I've had a great Father's Day myself. My kids made it wonderful.
Well, thank you. We love and appreciate you, so we're always going to try to do that.
And Elijah, and while we wait for Jack to get here, how would you like to tell these people about our most recent outing?
I believe you're referring to the area down in Land Between the Lakes, correct?
Yes.
Well, for no telling how long we've been interested in the story of the Beast of LBL, so we managed to find a little bit of time away from work that we went down into this little spot up in Land Between the Lakes that has been actually known for dogman sightings. They've been seen up there in the past, I think, 2 years or so.
It's been recent.
And it is also the site of the a Bowman Hunter incident, where they found the body of a bow hunter there in a soybean field, and his body was partially eaten. Now, there is a debate whether or not it was dogman related or
a hunting accident.
Yeah, but anyway, there have been dogman sightings there. So we got the urge to go there, and we're going to camp and spend the night. And we got there, start setting everything up, and we bought a bunch of tiki torches to take down there with us. We got them all lit up, citronella oil, keep all the mosquitoes away, because it was right next to a creek, so, you know, they're kind of festering down there.
And be honest, that didn't work well.
No, no. Citronella, the tiki torches worked okay, but not up until that point. But anyway, we had planned originally to camp there throughout the night, but we ended up packing up because we were right next to a nest of cottonmouths. We counted about five or six down there that kept crawling out from the bank and presumably eating frogs and a little bit of fish that were along the shore.
Yeah, my wife's okay with us hunting dogman, Bigfoot, things of that nature, but she's not okay with snakes.
No, not at all. But as the night went on, we decided to pack up and go because, you know, it's not really safe to be around that. My mom doesn't like snakes. And we were gathering up our equipment. We had a trail cam set up on the opposite side of the creek to, you know, collect anything that may have been going on over there while we weren't looking. So we stepped across, had to cross by a coiled up cottonmouth snake, by the way. And we started seeing some kind of eye shine over there. It was kind of amber in color, which I know is a common dogman eye color, but I think this was more raccoon in nature just because of how low it was to the ground, and it was kind of bobbing in the same manner that a raccoon would. But we were watching this, and I started to notice a different eye shine off in the distance, pretty far off in the darkness, and it even kind of had a bluish color to it. We were watching that when all of a sudden we heard...
You know, I've heard dogmen sometimes will have an electric blue eye shine.
I've heard that a couple of times myself, so I wonder if it was that. It seems like it was kind of higher up off the ground than what a raccoon would be. But we were watching it when all of a sudden one of the trees over there started shaking a little bit, and we heard a grunt or a growl, so kind of freaking out a little bit. We started stumbling back across, trying to get to the other side of the shore, passing the same cottonmouth snake again, and it's just kind of an exciting event because, you know, nothing, we don't really know of anything over in that region of Kentucky that would have that deep of a grunt or a growl.
Not that would be in the park, because before we went into the park, we'd stopped at the visiting center, and I was talking to one of the employees there about the wildlife there in the park, and there was nothing that they had that could have made that noise.
No, absolutely not. And they say they have no bear over there. Allegedly, there's not many cougar mountain lions, even though we know that kind of to be false.
None, according to them.
But as the night went on, we decided to stay a little bit longer and just kind of listen to things, keep things going a bit.
Sit out in our camp chairs, surrounded with our tiki torches.
Right on. And about a little after midnight, my dad said, "Hey, blow that silent dog whistle you have." So I blow it, and I reckon I didn't quite have the frequency right. It was a new dog whistle. It hadn't really been, tweaked to get to the right frequency yet. So we blew it. Nothing really happened. It kind of sounded off. So we blew it one more time, and 40 seconds after the second blow on that whistle, something started just tearing and breaking through trees, trying to come toward us, and we just scrambled up out of our chairs and was freaking out listening to this thing. We got it actually all on recording.
Well, I think less so much freaking out in the traditional sense is a moment of excitement, you know, as this thing was coming closer and closer to us, breaking limbs and trees and just tearing its way toward us. We got the audio recorded, and we'll have that on for you at some point.
Yes, I'm going to, at some point, put it on the radio show so we can just click it and play it for all y'all. And we should, in a couple of days, have a new Nightmare Nugget up on our channel about this area called Dark Hollow.
Beast of LBL or Creature of LBL, something to that effect, at Dark Hollow. We don't want to tell the exact location that we were at because whatever was there, it seemed like it could be dangerous. We wouldn't want to give the exact location where someone go down, provoke it, and maybe get themselves hurt.
Yeah, we wouldn't want anybody to get injured in any way because, you know, for one thing, there are poisonous snakes down there. And, you know, that's always going to be an issue, whether or not there's a creature anyway. And secondly, you know, since it has been a questionable site for a dog, man, we wouldn't want anybody to stir anything up and have an issue.
Well, it looks like Jack is ready to join us here in a moment.
I believe he is. Give me just 1 second to open up the line. Let's see. Uno momento. Hello, Jack. Can you hear us, brother?
Yes, sir.
How you doing tonight?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can. Thank
Not
you
too bad.
For joining us Father's Day.
Well, thank you, guys. It's been a long time in the works.
Yes, sir. We had Jack scheduled here a couple of weeks ago, and we had started putting down some hardwood floors during the day, and we had a bit of an emergency, which I won't go into here, and literally had to cancel the show because of it. It
took a shade longer than we were expecting.
Yes.
I think we finished up at about 9 o'clock at night on Sunday.
That's called life happens.
Yeah, I reckon so.
Well, how was your day today, Jack? Have for a good day?
Not too bad. We got a new batch of puppies and updating their whelping box and making a box for my sister. Keepsake box. So now I guess I'm settling in for the evening.
Well,
sounds like a plan. Sounds relaxing.
Well, Jack, without further ado, how about you tell us, our audience, a little bit about yourself?
Well, retired military. I grew up in Mobile, Alabama, hunting the Mobile River Swamp. A lot of people don't know very much about that. Harvard's been down there in the last few years. They've dubbed it North America's Amazon. It's about 400 or 500 square miles of nothing. Inhospitable territory. Alligators, water moccasins, rattlesnakes, egrets, loons, herons, osprey. There's a lot of species there. Just about every species in the southeastern United States is there, and there are numerous species that only occur there in the world. So that's where I grew up hunting and fishing. I grew up in a German household. I started hunting before I could see over the weeds. Men in my family were hard men, and if they had to pick me up and carry me out as a child, I got my behind tore up, and I didn't get to go back. So that's how I grew up in hunting and fishing and shrimping. And Bayou La Batre is a real place. Funny thing, you know, I don't know if you know about Forrest Gump, the hurricane that they talk about in there was Camille. It wasn't Carmen. And there's a guy that lives in Bayou La Batre that had 3 operational shrimp boats after Hurricane Camille. And in old people terms, he's got more money than Carter's got liver pills.
I'm very familiar with that phrase. Yeah. Sounds like a little piece of paradise.
Well, yes and no. There's a lot more than shrimp and seafood that moves through that little town. Gulf of Mexico is what it is.
Down a bit.
I guess you guys want to know what kicked this off for me, huh?
Well, yes, if you don't mind telling us.
All righty. So, back in that river swamp, we hunted and fished and, you know, did our thing. We actually ate a lot better when the men were laid off than when they were working. hunting fish for what you want to eat. And so me and my brother, my brother wasn't a nice guy. If you stick the farthest stretch of your imagination into what a nice guy is, I take that about 1.5 times 2. You might get close to my brother, God rest him. But we'd run back in that river swamp. We'd take 2 cans of gas, and we'd run about 3/4 of a can of gas out going back in there. I'd make sure that we had enough operating gas and gas to get out and go back there with a frying pan, some grease, and a pack of dogs, beagles. We run rabbits. The big rabbit down there, the darker swamp rabbit, is called a cane cutter, and it's a good eating rabbit. That swamp is a no kidding, don't get lost, don't lose your stuff kind of swamp. And odd part about this trip is we found this hill out in the middle of that swamp. And there were only 2 trees on top of it, really big enough, fit enough to hold a hammock. And, of course, my brother got those. So I went down the edge of that hill, threw my belt on the ground, started snatching deadwood out of the trees. That's the only dry wood in the swamp. There's a deadwood that's hanging in the tree. You pick anything up off the ground, it's either not going to burn or it's going to take it forever to burn. If it does burn, it's going to smoke you out anyway. So had a big limb breaker, something like that, I remember, and the dogs took off, and they went up the hill. And you know, when your dogs run off, it's a good idea to pay attention to that, and I did. I went up the hill with them. Another thing about my brother, if he were alive today, he'd be diagnosed with some kind of sleep disorder. And the joke in the family about him was, you know, if he falls asleep and the house catches on fire, his mind's going to die. That's just how hard he slept. And he didn't wake up well either. So get up there, and you know, I'm 15, 16 years old. It seems to me it was right after Hurricane Frederick. And so up there, and I don't really remember if I'd fallen asleep or not, but I remember it was good and dark, and I remember the fire was burning down, and something came in close to that hill and didn't sound small, and dogs took out after it and started running. You guys ever run dogs?
I've been when I went hunting with some dogs, but I had never really done it myself.
Yeah. Well, you got different dogs for different things, and you know, you got a jump dog, you got trail dog, and you got dogs that run fast and hard. And you get a good pack of dogs together, and you can, you know, do some good hunting. And we had one dog in this pack. His name was Mike, and he was a bigger fox type beagle. He's, you know, long legs, big square head, hard eyebrows, and he ran slow. He was kind of mean. So the dogs take after him, and if you run animals with dogs, you know, a rabbit will run in a big circle. It doesn't take a whole lot of smarts to hunt them. You just find out where the dogs went through last time and stand there still about, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes, and the rabbit's going to run back over you unless it's already made the trip a couple of times. And deer tend to find some kind of break or ridge or water or something like that, and they'll run down that, and they'll find some place flat and open, and they'll run just about as fast and hard as they can. And you know, once they gain a little ground, they'll ditch over a piece of water over the top of a ridge, jump into some scrub, something like that. And I haven't run a whole lot of foxes, but foxes I have, they run straight, and they run fast. And this thing ran straight and fast through this swamp in the middle of the night, and that's hard to do, even in the daytime. And ran almost clean out of hearing, and it was out there, and it starts to come back, and you know, comes back, and it gets a couple hundred yards out, and these were beagles. They weren't coon dogs. They weren't deer dogs. They weren't, you know, blue ticks, walkers, black and tans, and, you know, they wasn't like that. They were just regular old beagles, and they don't tree, and they stopped. And, you know, dogs make a yipping sound when they're trailing and they're about to jump, and then they squall when they jump. And, you know, guys, you get bay dogs that'll sit and bay. And but these dogs weren't even, they weren't baying. They were angry. This was aggressive. And after a few minutes, one of them let out a cry, squall, and dog shut down. And they come back, and as I see them coming back, and they get in the edge of the light, and I look at them, and they're all humble, and their heads are down, their tails are down, and, you know, I'm thinking, crap, they got a skunk, and they're gonna stink, and just gonna, well, there's another S word for stink, dealing with these dogs, but they didn't stink like a skunk. They stunk like swamp and swamp mud and wet dog, and they came back and wouldn't get away from me. About as far as they get away from me, as far as I could, you know, shove them. You know, you get hounds, whether it's beagles or big hounds or whatever, and they start coming in. They're not house dogs. They're not lap dogs. And you put your foot on their shoulder, and you just kind of redirect them as they're coming to you. Keep them off of you so they don't get you more nasty than what you already are. But that's about as far away from me as they get, and that's when I guess you say the show started. And so this thing would scream, and it would start in a very low growling kind of noise that you can really feel more than you could hear, and it would go all the way through the vocal range up to basically the sound of a high pitched whistle. And it was a bright moonlit night, and whatever this thing was, you know, it grabbing and shake trees. Move in and out around the camp. The thing about the dogs when they came back is Mike didn't come with them. Mike didn't show up. And, you know, that out there, and you're out there in that swamp, and, you know, one of the jokes about swamp people, and I grew up with swamp people, is nothing's legal about them but the birth certificate. Some of them are questionable. Nobody's legal all the time, and we get out there, and you know, the law says you get 3 field loads of small game hunting. You put a plug in your gun. Doesn't matter whether it's, you know, rabbits, dove, duck, quail, whatever. Small game hunts, 3 loads. And what we do is we would put a plug in the gun. And we were that far back. We'd put, you know, couple rounds of buckshot and a slug is first 2 rounds, load 2 field loads, chamber round, and put another field load in there. So we, you know, meet the intention of the law. But, you know, if things got bad and you needed something that would stop some more weight, you know, you could rack those 3 rounds out real quick and be able to bring something to bear that actually had some stopping power. And, you know, back then mine was a 3-inch Magnum 870 Wingmaster. Remember that gun? I love that gun. But, yeah, I jacked those 3 field loads out of there, and I've loaded up a buckshot and slugs and went throughout the night and burned everything on that hill. And the thing that really sticks out in my memory, I burned a 5-gallon bucket. We had a bucket. We carried some stuff up there, and I dumped that crap out of that bucket, and I burned that bucket because things were getting kind of thin. The fire was getting low. And didn't give me much light, but, you know, it didn't burn for long. It burns kind of fast. When I went hunting, I only really had one job in the hunting thing, you know, other than hunting, and that was wake my brother up before daylight. That's about the only way he'd wake up and not become real nice, I guess you'd say. So this morning, you know, that morning I didn't wake him up. It was me and these stinking dogs around me. And sun comes up, he wakes up, he's mad. And And I said, my brother wasn't a nice guy. He wasn't a nice guy. And I had had enough that night that I did something I hadn't done to that point. And I cussed him. And I made him understand that, you know, I was leaving. He better get in that boat because I was leaving. And the not nice guy turned up the volume, and I'm standing there with a loaded gun in my hand. He's just woke up, and I told him, I said, listen, I'm leaving. You can get your blah 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 in that blah 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 blah, blah boat, you know, or you know, I'll send somebody back to get you. And I don't know exactly where we are, so I'm not sure where to tell them. And I can tell you, I'm not coming back. I'm leaving. So, and the men in my family were hard, and I was, you know, for 15, 16 years old, I was pretty hard. And he taught me into that it was all in my imagination, and this isn't the way we act. This is not what we do. You know, we live in a swamp. We operate in a swamp. You know, we are it. And one thing he could deny is Mike was gone. Mike didn't come back. So he asked me which direction the dogs were when they shut down, and I, you know, pointed out to him, and that's the way we went. You know, by this time, me and him, when we went hunting, we'd split off. We'd get, you know, get in the woods, start going about a 45-degree angle, let the dogs loose, you know, go out there and hunt. We'd track each other on brush noise and cracks and shots and cutting off the dogs. And this day, I didn't let him get out of sight. So going through the swamp, we ended up in an oak hammock, and what we used to call an oak hammock was a, you know, stand of mature oaks. I don't know if you've ever been in a stand of mature oaks and a bunch of pines. It's pretty much the same way in any forest, but they grow up and they make a canopy, and the stuff underneath it dies, and they cover the ground with leaves, and the stuff under it dies some more, and you can see for a pretty good distance. It gets pretty open.
Right.
And whatever got a hold of that dog, beat it up against a tree, an oak tree, and blood started around somewhere around shoulder height and went down to about waist height with blood and hair and meat stuck in that tree. And he was a good sized beagle. He was a long legged beagle, you know. He probably weighed a good 30 pounds or so. And whatever had him threw him about 30 feet or so. And when he hit the ground, he probably slid another 5-10 feet. And whatever got a hold of him didn't leave a claw mark, didn't leave a puncture mark for teeth. It just beat him against that tree and then threw him.
So
and,
either way,
you know, hunting dogs, like, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just saying, either way, it would have been hard for a human to accomplish this, right?
Yeah, Mike, you know, he wasn't a big dog. I train dogs. I've trained forest dogs. I train retrievers now. I'm sitting out on the back porch with my male yellow lab and my female yellow lab. I got one of the pups, older pups, and four pups in the house. And there's not many dogs at 30 pounds that you'd like to get a hold of by hand, particularly if they're unpleasant. 30 pounds of dog and, you know, mouthful of teeth and, you can do it. It's not on my list of things to do.
No.
You know, yeah. And I've kept some big dogs off of me, but it's not something I would choose to do. I guess if they shot me up a tree and wouldn't leave, eventually I'd have to come down and deal with them. So, but no, I don't think a human can pull that off. You know,
it sounds
the force it took to crush that dog against that tree, I don't think that I know a human that could create the force on the tree and leave the meat and hair in it like that. But, you know, and as far as it threw it, yeah, if you had a big old, you know, hammer throwing, discus throwing, shot put kind of guy, I guess he might be able to pull that off throwing it, but the force of wrapping it into that tree, no, I don't think that's within human ability. Besides that, we were so far back in that swamp that, you know, you don't go down out there and you don't go alone because they're not going to find you. That swamp will consume you. If you go down, that swamp will consume you in about a week. And nobody is going to find you. It's just too big. So.
I know.
No.
So that's
say again,
you
were a little muffled.
I'm sorry?
Well, that didn't get me interested in Bigfoot. My brother reached out and took collar off that dog. You know, you get a brass tag, you name a phone number in case your dog got something back. Took collar off that dog, and he looked at me and he said, don't you tell nobody about this. And, you know, my brother was a guy to be taken seriously. I didn't. Unless I told anybody about it, my folks found out, particularly my dad. I wouldn't have been out there with him in that swamp again. Down there, they got three terms for things that aren't, let's say, mainstream, and that's boogers, haints, and catamounts. And they don't talk about it out loud. It's usually, you know, something under the breath, something where they pull somebody to the side where, you know, talking to folks, and, you know, it's just short of embarrassing, I guess. But it wasn't until I'd been in the military for, I joined the military until I was 21, but wasn't until I was in the military for 5, maybe 7 years before I told anybody about that. So, and then the internet came along, and, you know, you can glean a lot of information out of what people had to say, and, you know, it wasn't until just a few years ago that, you know, I'd heard of a hunter losing a dog like that. And, yeah, I'm not a believer, even though I have seen, heard, smelled many things that I can't account to a known animal in North America. I guess that's the thing that really feeds my curiosity. I live in the middle of 61 acres right now, and hadn't been living here. House stood empty for a long time. I'm just south of the Pennsylvania line. This house stood empty for a long time, and we moved in here, and it's got a shop, so I put my woodworking tools out here in the shop, and, you know, finally got a shop for the first time in a very long time. And I was out there at about 3:30 in the morning and came outside and let the dogs out. So I put this fence up and let the dogs out. And my dogs, you know, pee and poop on command, and they get, back then I was smoking, they get the length of one cigarette, and that's it. You know, they kennel back up, especially in the middle of the night like that, and I kennel them back up. And it was real cold. It was, you know, in the mid-teens, and I stepped outside, and I carry when I'm here, especially in the evening times. It takes a county a long time to get here. You know, I'm on my property, and I can carry. So I do, and I stepped off the back porch here, and I said to myself, because I'm standing here in Dickies and two sets of long johns, four layers in the top. The top layer was a vest, and I got my vest pockets full of stuff because I've been working in the shop. And I'm like, nah, because carrying is not a comfortable thing. A lot of people think carrying, you know, sidearm is all right, and you don't really notice it. Oh, you absolutely notice it. I was like, can I even get this thing out with all these clothes on? And I reached down, I hit the holster that I have has a safety catch on it, so that you pretty much have to have two hands on it if you're not the person carrying to get it out, so somebody can take your weapon. I reached down and hit that safety, and it snapped like you took the safety off, and I drew it, and as I did, something across the road about 150 feet from me crashed through those saw briars like you were bouncing a 400-pound boulder through the woods. It was pretty amazing. Ooh. And just doosh, 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 and that stuff will take the hide off you over there. I mean, it's thick saw briars. It's kind of scrub where you need to have a limb that you throw out in front of you, and you stomp that limb down to make yourself a way through it, because if not, you're going to become a blood donor.
So something had a thick layer.
So, oh, yeah, it had it was big, and it had thick hide. And it didn't sound like it was on 4 feet. It sounded like big human-ish two-footed strides. You know, you get gallop noises. You know, the thump, the thump, the thump, the thump, the thump. You know, the gallop noise right. Like you're strumming your fingers with four-footed animals most times. And this was just a steady, hard, single impact two-footed stride. So I go down the driveway and I shine over there with my mag light. It's so cold that all the humidity had frozen and there was no real moisture in the air and everything sparkles. And, you know, you do that thing, like I said, you know, nobody's legal all the time. There's times when I've hunted because I had to eat, not because I wanted to hunt. And you take eye shine and you can sweep an area real fast. If there's eye shine there, you just sweep it fast and you see the eye shine, you turn the light off, and you move toward it, and you turn the light on again. I turned the light on and swept it and swept back, and then, you know, I thought I caught eye shine a couple of times in frost or moisture in a spider web or something like that. If you take that light and kind of tip it a couple of ways, you can get that thing to repeat, you know. And I couldn't get it to repeat, and I'm starting to call myself, you know, foolish and crazy and everything else. And so I start walking back down the driveway toward the shop because I got to shut the shop down. And keep in mind, this is 3:30 in the morning in January, just about 10, 12 miles south of the Pennsylvania state line, in the middle of 61 acres. And on the side of the shop I'm looking at right now, there's a light pole there, and there's a light at the top of it. You know, a lot of people in the southeast where I'm from, they call them booger lights. And it was on. You know, it's got that that kind of peach-colored fog-like glow to it, and I'm looking at that, and it's at the corner of the building. It's a big metal roof on the shop. As I'm walking toward the shop, I'm about halfway back down the driveway. This rock comes from behind me, and I can see it drop into the light of that street light and hit the top of the shop. Ricochets up in the air, comes back down, rolls back down, and lands in the gutter. 3:30 in the morning, middle of 61 acres. And even though this is the state of Maryland, this is the kind of town where you leave your doors unlocked and leave your stuff sitting in the yard and nobody mess with it. And so something or somebody, you know, because I can't rule out somebody because I didn't see what it was. But something at 3:30 in the morning, somewhere around 17 degrees, that can tear through briars and scrub that'll take the hide off of me and you, decided that it was a good idea to throw a rock at me. Get that early in the morning. But did I see Bigfoot? Nope. Did I say it was Bigfoot? Nope.
Just something kind of
but, it kind of sounds like it. But I'm a guy, and you know, like I said, I'm retired military, and my community, I wasn't a soft guy, wasn't a teams guy, wasn't a spec ops guy, but I was a guy that, you know, if you went up to people in my branch of the service, you said, "Hey, here's what I do," and they'd look at you and say, "Huh? What's that? I don't think I ever heard of that before." And that's it's a real stark realities kind of community, and you know, there's that's 20 years of who I am. It's hard to lay that down and just walk away from it. And I've got other friends that, you know, have been on the phone with me when I'm standing out in the yard and, you know, rock hits the yard, rock hits the middle of the road, you know, hear limb breaks or a howl or something like that. And some of those guys are podcasters and they give me no end of grief. How are you not believing that? It's funny, they give me garbage for not saying that I'm a believer, and my wife just came and sat down beside me. She gives me grief because I'm obsessed. So I guess that's what I get for being on the fence, huh?
Technically, until you get like a body or DNA, you can't really prove
or see it for sure. You know, you can't say for sure it's there.
That's fine, and that's where I am. You know, and we rag on each other, and you know, when it's not something like that, you know. I'm a military guy, and I got a military sense of humor, and that thing gets pretty brutal every once in a while. But it winds down to, and I've told them all, you know, until I can watch it blink, until I can watch it breathe, until I can watch it operate, until I can smell its breath or pick a tick off of it or something like that, I'm sorry, I am not a believer. I'm not a belief kind of guy. You know, I've got one belief, faith in my life, and that is there's a being greater than me for everything else, I want proof. I want hard evidence. I want something that I can use all my senses to experience. And then when I can do that, then I can say, yep, there we go. That's awesome. I'm not a believer. Well, I'm a knower. Right now, I'd say I am a suspector.
Right. But even though you're not someone who's actually a believer, you do still work in the cryptid field, helping out with like Asheville Cryptid Society, and you helped make a website, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we I'm good friends with a guy named Nathan Bowen. Heck of a good man. I was listening to a podcast, and I didn't call the podcaster or contact the podcaster. I contacted Nate because of his ethics and morals and what I heard him saying when they had other people that were guests on there that had personal experiences with him. They spoke about his ethics and morals and who he was, and I contacted him, and I thank God that I did because I count him as one of my best friends on earth right now. And he had been thinking about a database for a long time, and I'd been thinking about a database for a long time, and you know, there's a lot of complicated stuff that goes along with that stuff, and you start talking about qualitative and quantitative analytics, and you know, trending stuff out, and how to do that thing that can get out there. So we came together, and I put together a questionnaire, and the questionnaire is a limited response questionnaire, and it asks a lot of questions, and with a lot of questions, there are a lot of responses for, you know, a bunch of the questions, and it asks for, you know, separation between Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and Dogman, and it asks for, you know, it gets into terrain, and it asks a question about terrain density. You know, whether it was open or dense, or and then for that's cover, actually that's title under the cover section. Then we get terrain, and then terrain, it says describe the terrain, and you know, you get dense forest, open timber, boulder field, swamp, river bottom, mountain, hill country, you know, a bunch of front backside yard. And from there, it gets into population density for urban and rural, and it gives some basic definitions, guidelines, so it's not as subjective. You want to move from subjective to objective when you go from qualitative to quantitative analytics. And, you know, it's a little long, and it's a little long on purpose because it's probably more than what a troll wants to deal with, you know. Just to go through there and go through the click and the way that the rules are set up in there to kind of keep the trolls out. It's pretty intensive. Pretty intensive. And then on the back end of it, we give you a spot where you can actually type something in instead of making a selection. So that you can, this question, is there anything we didn't think to ask or anything that we didn't think to add as a response to a question? And then a section where you can tell us about what happened if you want to tell us about what happened. And it, you know, that's really important if you're having a problem and you want somebody to contact you, or you want to be put in contact with a podcaster so that they have some background to scope, and, you know, they get to know a little bit about what happened. And, you know, we know a few podcasters, and if they have a special request, then we try to put them in touch with those folks. If they just want a podcaster in general, we'll send it out to everybody. You don't have to put in any contact information. Putting it in your email is absolutely optional. I don't want any personal identifying information in there. I've moved into the IT field, and you know, having a database with personal identifying information, and that gets corrupted, that's really bad. Plus, I don't want anybody showing up at your research area or your home or someplace like where you work or some kind of garbage like that, being able to identify, you know, who you are or anything like that. All right, so we asked for something to call you, a pseudonym, you know, a fake fictitious name, so that we can separate your sightings and group your sightings and do that thing. But Yeah, that database, when you look at that and you can establish a historical model, once we have enough data, we can start moving into a predictive model where we might be able to say, okay, we need to go into this portion of the country, and we need to go at this time of the year, and we need to go into this kind of terrain and cover, and we need to look for this color primarily at this time of the day. And
great idea, I tell you. Absolutely great idea.
So, yeah, that's that thing, and it's we came up with a name for the group. Actually, it was Nate that made the final decision, and it's Big Dog T2B, and that stands for Bigfoot Dog Man. T is in Tango, tracking and trending the beasts. B is in Bravo. So, short title is Big Dog T2B.
We shared it on our Facebook group, and we'll try to let people know about it and out and about doing things.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And with only two Facebook posts that we were aware of, in the short term, two people, you know, podcasters put it on their Facebook, and we're up to around 110 responses, and that's just two Facebook pages.
Oh,
so
wow.
Once we get a little bit more information, and we've got a dedicated website coming, and for Big Dog T2B, and once we get that website up, then we can host that link to the survey internally, and hopefully things will really crank up. So,
absolutely. Now, Jack, I actually have a quick question for you. I didn't realize the connection until you just mentioned that you were from Mobile, Alabama. But have you ever heard? I was reading about earlier, there was allegedly they described it as a wolf woman of Mobile, Alabama.
Wolf woman, yep.
It
was actually out in Tolmanville. Yep, it was actually out in Tolmanville. I believe it was actually out in Tolmanville. Tolmanville is the outskirts of the city of Mobile. When you look at that city, that city's huge now, right? And it's incorporated a bunch of little suburbs, but the way I remember the wolf woman it was out in Tolmanville, and I was probably 9-10 years old at the time when the wolf woman came around. I remember that. Yeah. Matter of fact, if you Google it and you pull up the picture, you're going to see it on all fours. The front limbs are human hands. The back end is a dog with a tail, and the head is primarily just human with long feminine hair.
Huh.
I remember that. Remember it well.
Do you think there's potentially any fact to the story, or just more of just kind of rumors from the area, or more?
Well, Tolmanville and the folks that lived out there, particularly at that time, were, easily excitable, superstitious, right? Superstitious. If anything came out, you know, there was any way what we would call today paranormal, those folks reacted. And it didn't take much, you know, to have something that became, you know, in the Booger Hank Catamount kind of category. A haint is basically a variation on the word haunt, and haints were things that, you know, the way I remember it was, you know, you see a dark shadow, you see a figure, you see something moving through the woods. But you weren't exactly, and it just kind of disappeared, and you weren't exactly sure that you saw something. catamounts were screamers and boogers were mischievous and things that you saw. They were big human looking things, the way I remember. But yeah, the Wolf Woman, that was actually, if you Google Mobile Press Register, Wolf Woman, and you come up and you look at that thing, that's the picture that should come up.
And oh, definitely.
Yeah. And I want to say I was born in 65, so that should have probably happened somewhere between 70 and 80. No, 70 and 75, because I wasn't anywhere near high school.
Definitely an interesting story, though. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, what's next for you, Jack?
Say again?
What's next for you in the field of Bigfoot research? You got anything on the horizon?
Well, I went down to the Huntsville area. That's where Nate's from. Excuse me, I gotta correct my dog here. Leave it.
Out.
Good dog. Knucklehead decided it was a good idea to eat some limbs. Anyway, so Yeah, that's a Labrador. They work with their mouth, and if you don't put them to work, they'll put themselves to work, and it'll be something stupid. You can count on it. Anyway, so I went down to the Huntsville area, and went down there with Nate, and we did an outing down into Bankhead National Forest, and that's a whole show or a couple of shows on to itself. Nate sent me a USB with some thermal that we got down there, and it's kind of disturbing
we had had Nate on the show a few weeks ago, and he had mentioned something to us about some thermal he had that was exciting.
Yeah, well, Nate and we, it was me, Nate, one civilian contractor, and two prior service guys. One of them was my son. My son was a soft support guy. Like I said, I wasn't a soft guy. I wasn't a soft support guy. I wasn't a teams guy. You know, I wasn't that thing. But I can say I've had some flexic terrain. But anyway, so we're out there, and you got a bunch of guys, and you know they've got their stuff in one sock, and the civilian contractor guy, he had no end of joy picking on Nate when we first got out there about, and some of the others of us, about what we believe and the reason that we scheduled the outing. And you know, halfway through the first night, the picking stopped and the questions started because it got eventful. And Nate and one of the prior service guys, the one who wasn't my son, they're looking off to the north. And they're watching a couple of black objects. The thermal was on black hot, and they're watching a couple of objects. Looks like they're moving through the trees, and it looks like they're moving downhill from east to west toward one of the creeks that runs through Bankhead. And they're looking at the thermal, and they didn't know that he'd taken the pictures. They didn't know that he'd really taken the video until later. And he's watching these things, and they're out about, you know, 80, 100 yards plus, and lo and behold, there was something that was probably about 25, 50 feet in front of him. And Nate's a big dude. I'm 6 feet tall, 220. I'll hold a candle to Nate. Nate's a big old boy. And from Nate's perspective, you know, because the lens opens up and gives you more distance, gives you more height, right, as it looks away from you. Whatever this was well bigger than Nate. And
wow,
the problem is that, you know, he didn't know he was taking the pictures. I don't think he knew that he's got two thermals. And I don't think that he knew that he had the thermal that actually took pictures and video, because he took two pictures and he took the video, and the video was actually 0.2 seconds long and 6 frames. Part of what I do as a profession now is I do training, and I do video and training. So I've got a software, and I've got a version of it that I actually own at home, and I dumped it in that program and took that 0.2 seconds and made it about 10 seconds. And in there, I can count 6 frames, and it's not a small thing. And at 25 to 50 feet away from him, and you know how fast a wild animal can cover 50 feet. And if it was that big, and if it wanted him, it would have had him. If that's what it is, right? All I know is that it's something. We've got pictures of it. You know, the pictures show what it looks like when it's not there. The video, and we have a picture of it when it was there, and we have 0.2 seconds, 6 frames of it moving. And you can see it on both sides of this tree as it's moving. And that's disturbing, because you had two prior service guys there. You had a retired military guy there. You had a civilian contractor there, and you had Nate, who's a Bigfoot researcher there, and this thing's 25 to 50 feet away. And we had significant leaf litter on the ground, and never heard it. And I am adept in the woods. I track, I hunt, I bow hunt. I don't gun hunt anymore. There's no real fun in it. But when we go out and we do this thing, I carry a weapon that'll stop 1,000 pounds. I carry a 4.58 SOCOM. And we had 4.58 SOCOM. We had a 308. We had a 12 gauge, and we had 2.556s out there with us in this party of five. I had a Glock 23 40 caliber that was my carry, and Nate had a 45 long coat carry. So when we go out there, we're ready. You know, I don't want to shoot one. No, that's not me. I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with any family members. I don't want to live by a feud with these things. I don't want to do that. But you know, we went out there, and that's what we were looking for. And we had an easy dozen different anomalies. We 3 days, 2 nights in Bankhead National Forest. One guy saw 2 squirrels. There's an anomaly for you. No birds, no rabbits, no raccoons, no hogs. Saw plenty of hogs tonight. No hogs, no deer. 3 days, 2 nights, Bankhead National Forest in the middle of it. A good mile off trail. Right. We were far enough back that there was no trash. There was no human sign at all. 3 days, 2 nights, did not see an animal. One guy saw 2 squirrels.
Other than that, it's pretty bad.
That is an anomaly. In the middle of a national forest in March.
Definitely is. Something was up there. Well, Nate, buddy, Jack, I hate to kind of cut it short tonight. It was only 45 minutes, and we've actually gone an hour so far. So I'm going to have to start cutting it down in the final few moments. Is there anything else you'd like to say or tell us about?
Well, one of the things that I'd like to say is God bless skeptics, right?
Yes.
Skeptics are the ones that keep you in the realm of acceptable in mainstream society, right? It's difficult to talk about anything, and I've got pictures on my phone that if I looked at people and said, hey, I was in the Congo and I took this picture, right? They'd say, oh, that's awesome. How close did you get? You know, what was it like being that close to? But if I show them my phone and I show them the same picture and I say, you know, I took that picture 30 miles from here in West Virginia, they'll say, oh, that's just some rocks, or, you know, that's just some camera tricks, or, you know, that's nothing. What are you talking about? Right. It's because of those folks where everything is Bigfoot that keeps the folks that are going after hard evidence, they're going after hard data, that keeps them from being able to gain ground. And, you know, for some folks that are out there devoting their life to it, trying to gain some funding to do real research. So God bless the skeptics. God bless the people that are looking into it, that the first option that they take is how to destroy or associate what they're looking at with something in a known environment.
Yes, because I've been out with people who they took a picture of a bunch of trees and they're like, I see two big feet and some space aliens in these trees. You see those? And I'll be like, I see
that all the time.
Yep. And I'm not, I don't discredit the people that say that, right? I wasn't there. If that's what you saw, I cannot prove that you didn't see that. And it's not in me to look at those people and call them a liar. That's not in me.
No.
You know,
don't see it.
It's just, you know, okay, if that's what you saw and that's what you believe, God bless you. That's not me. I hope I don't see that. Right? I've got enough on my plate with wondering what's around my place right now. Throwing stuff, leaving tracks, howling, throwing sticks, you know, killing deer. I've got enough on my plate with that without it cloaking or jumping in and out of a portal. And I'm not saying that they don't. I'm just saying that, you know, I have enough variables in that equation alone, and haven't been able to solve the equation.
I understand you.
So, yeah, in closing, I'd say God bless skeptics.
Well, all right.
Keep you honest.
Do appreciate you being on the show, and you've been a great guest, and your experience in the swamp sounds pretty terrifying. But we're really glad to come on here and was willing to share it with us.
Yes, thank you very much.
Roger that, gentlemen. You guys take care, and God bless you.
Yes, sir. And once again, happy Father's Day, and thank you for your service to our country.
Roger that, sir. It's my honor.
Have a good night, my friend.
Take care.
Good night, sir. You guys take care. Bye-bye.
Till next time, you know, we're going to be out there on the edges trying to do what we can do to keep doing the research. Hopefully we'll have some really interesting things to bring to you. But until we see you and talk to you next time, stay groovy, folks.
Stay groovy, y'all.
Thank you.